listen to how they're going completely and utterly mad for him. Alexander Rakauf from Norway. The Scandinavians have had such an influence on our pop music. Joining us is an aficionado of Scandinavian pop, James O'Brien from the ABC. Good afternoon, James O'Brien. Good afternoon, James.
Yes.
Hello, James.
Hello, yes.
James, thank you so much for coming on the program. We were just listening to Alexander's fantastic fairy tale song, but this Norway winning the Eurovision Song Contest, it's kind of the ilk, isn't it? Scandinavia's always done quite well.
Look, they have done quite well, but Norway hasn't always done well. Do you know how many times they've actually recorded no points in the Eurovision Song Contest? I mean, this is the highest they've ever scored. And chatting to our friends who are Norwegian, they just think it's, you know, the best thing they've ever experienced in the world, ever. But four times they've actually got no points. Nothing.
No points at all.
Zero.
So in actual fact, this is it holds a level of esteem, though, in Scandinavia and in Europe, whereas over here in Australia, the song contest, we treat with a lot of irony and fun.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think we're a bit like the English in lots of regards. I think the English, look, I think there might even be a degree of xenophobia going on, but the English kind of treat the Eurovision Song Contest as a joke, and maybe that's because they don't win anymore.
Mm.
But I think it also has that sort of quality here too. But then last week, did you see the 7:30 report did a story about the Eurovision Song Contest?
I didn't, actually.
I reckon if Kerry O'Brien starts talking about Eurovision, suddenly it's on a brand new level.
Well, it's actually kind of interesting because all the ancient philosophers used to say that it was art and music that brought the world together, that brought happiness to the world. I think it was Schopenhauer that said otherwise life was a bit of a boxing match. And so the fact that Europe can join together with this song contest is kind of extraordinary.
Look, I think it's really interesting. I was talking about it last night with a friend of mine, Louisa. We went along to a pub last night to watch it on the big screen, which is a load of fun.
It was too much fun.
And Louisa has been to the contest for the last couple of years. She didn't go this year, but she's been to where the contest has been held the last couple of years. And she said it's a bit like footy, except that if you meet if you're playing World Cup soccer or something like that, and you see someone from the opposing team, you sort of a bit of disdain towards them and so on. Whereas this is actually all about if you meet someone from a different team, you actually really like it.
Mm.
So it's kind of, and it's got a really interesting historical sort of context in terms of Europe and how it's changed over the last 40 years. You know, the arrival of, the Eastern Bloc countries, some of the Southern European countries, their involvement and so on. So it kind of traces the changing face of Europe, and that pop music is more than just what comes out of the UK, Australia and
the United States, exactly. And tell me, what about the judging system? Now, I have noticed that according to political allegiances, the scores can go up and down.
Look, that has been an issue in the past.
It's part of the fun, really.
Yeah, look, it's part of the fun, but I actually think there's a deeper kind of reason for it as well. I mean, you can say, look, we voted for you because, you know, we used to be part of the empire or something like that. But I think it's also because you've got cultural similarities. I mean, the Scandinavian countries are culturally quite similar.
Mm.
I mean, they kind of understand each other. The Eastern Bloc countries, I mean, they've got all this common history and common musical sort of histories as well. And so suddenly you hear something which sounds kind of familiar to what is your musical heritage, and it kind of makes sense. And I think there is, you know, some dodgy voting that goes on. But I think there's also that deeper thing that, you know, it's common sort of cultural heritage.
It resonates, I hate to say, but strikes a chord.
Yeah.
I've got a text message here from Greggy who says that you can't possibly look at the influence of those from the Nordic states without mentioning those wonderful individuals that made up the excellent Aqua.
Aqua. Now, they were a Danish band.
Mm-hmm.
They had two or three hit songs in Australia, and they actually, when Denmark won the Eurovision Song Contest with the Olsen Brothers a few years ago, they performed the year that Denmark hosted the contest the following year. Aqua were fantastic. Probably one of the first examples of Swedish pop getting an international reputation was, do you remember that song from the early 70s, Hooked on a Feeling?
Hooked on a Feeling. That one.
That was Swedish.
My.
It's a band called Blue Suede, it's actually Blue Swede, and they were a band led by a guy called Björn Schiff, and that was a huge international hit in 1973. Along the way, obviously ABBA were a huge sort of international phenomenon. But in the last couple of years, the Cardigans, Roxette, bands like that, all of Britney Spears' music is recorded in Stockholm because they've got this kind of very strong sort of pop sensibility, where they've all sort of grown up watching American and British pop shows on TV. And so I think they're quite an outward-looking country.
I think I saw a documentary on ABBA once whereby they said they'd taken Phil Spector's Wall of Sound with ABBA.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and look, Björn and Benny from ABBA were in their own bands back in the 60s. And, you know, Benny was in the equivalent, the Swedish equivalent to the Beatles. I think it's part of that Swedishness to look outside your own countryside, because when you've got a population of 4, 6, 8 million with most of those Scandinavian countries, you know, you need to have a perspective on the rest of the world.
And just finally, given that the winner gets to host the Eurovision Song Contest in their own country the next...
Yes.
time round,
yeah.
Like, this would be an extraordinary event for Norway to host. Did it have to bring in money?
Yeah, look, I think most countries want to host it once. They don't want to host it a second time, it seems to be. And I think you'll sometimes find that when they win one year, the next year, when they're competing again, they try and put a dud in there so that they don't have to do it again. With the one exception was the Irish, who hosted it for about 4 or 5 years in a row. And then the one year they lost it was to an Irish-sounding song by a Norwegian band called Secret Garden, which had all the flutes and all that sort of stuff.
You see, they can do it every time, those Scandinavian countries. They can even replicate something that's not their own and still make it resonate.
Absolutely.
James, your other standout highlight from last night's competition, I think this was the runaway winner, though, wasn't it?
Standout highlight. Oh, look, what about the Greek guy last night? You know, that was written by two Australians. Two blokes from Sydney wrote the Greek entry.
It couldn't be any more true than if they'd been from Melbourne. James O'Brien, thanks so much for coming on the program.
No worries, Libby.
There you go, the influence of Scandinavian countries on pop music.